Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I am Branham, and it's Brian behind the glass. Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Busy show. Busy bees today. Garrett will be joining us at 4:30. A little blessing, stressing. What are we blessing? What are we stressing? The Ringer's Myron Fader to talk about her new book, The Dream, which is about Akeem Olajuwon, as you might know. And then Mickey Story, manager of the AAA national champion Sugarland Spacers, will be joining us at 3:30. So very, very busy show. Everybody has the trade bug. Because of the trades that went down yesterday in the NFL. You saw two receivers traded. Devontae Adams got traded. We later saw Amari Cooper get traded. We saw the Houston Texans. I mean, Nick Caserio, he's seen all this will and dillin going on. He couldn't be left without a deal. He couldn't be left without a deal to Nick Caserio, so he ended up making a trade, too, because he didn't want to get left out, trading Cam Akers for and a conditional seventh for a conditional seventh. And a lot of people were talking about how, you know, they want to improve in certain areas, and I've always seen corner come up. A lot of people talk about trading for a corner when it comes to the Texans. And then, you know, Kamari Lassiter report out today from Aaron Wilson. Take that for what it's worth. Aaron Wilson's usually right. 9 times out of 10, he's right. D'Amico thing, though, notwithstanding. But he reported today that Kamari Lassiter's spatula does indeed have a fracture, which isn't great news. Just looking at Google and what AI translated for me, that's like a 3 to 6 week injury if there's not surgery. If there is surgery, now you're looking at like upwards of 8 to 12 months. So knock on wood, it's the non-surgical fracture of the spatula. But even if he does, you know, can recover without the surgery, it's still going to be upwards of, you know, AI actually said 6 to 8 weeks, actually. So how long you're out with Kamari Lassiter, we'll see about that. But if you do trade for a corner, what's the plan? Like, I've seen a lot of, well, trade for a corner. Okay, then what? Like, what are you doing after you trade for a corner? What does the starting lineup look like? What does your secondary look like? Because all this corner talk, who's he's not replacing Derek Stingley. Now, Kamari Lassiter's injury throws a bug into this because, like, we'll just put him in Kamari Lassiter's spot until Kamari Lassiter is back. But if you had Stingley healthy, Lassiter healthy, and Jalen Petrie still healthy, where are you playing the corner if you trade for a corner?
Yeah, I don't think I was looking for corner.
Not you specifically.
No, I know, but I'm saying I wouldn't have thought corner first and foremost in looking at what the Texans should be looking at in a trade until we got the news, and credit to you for doing the deep dive on the severity or the recovery.
It was a surface level dive. I typed it into Google.
But nonetheless, the fact is everybody thinks when you hear, oh, he's going to be out for a game or two, and he isn't immediately put on the injured list, then you start thinking to yourself, well, he should be back sooner rather than later. But certain injuries end up being more debilitating than others, and if he's going to be out a significant portion of time, then you should start looking at a corner to fill in for him that could add depth for you once he comes back, assuming he gets back at a certain point, because you're about to face a lot tougher schedule coming up. You're going to face a lot better quarterbacks coming up. And we already know that, you know, Stingley's on one side, he's got that on lock. But on the other side, if you don't have Lassiter, that could be a huge problem. The guys they brought in the offseason haven't turned out, and they could use depth regardless. So I think that before the Lassiter injury, yeah, it could have been a position you look to upgrade for depth. Now you might look at it more significantly if he's going to miss any significant amount of time.
So assuming the health of Stingley, Lassiter, and Petrie, it's a depth piece of what you're trading for at the corner spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much that helps your defense.
But, you know, you and I both were talking about this, and then you went back and watched the film again on the All-22. Petrie's concern is in coverage. So, yes, he's a solid piece, and he really brings a lot of physicality on the line of scrimmage and in the run game. but there are deficiencies in his coverage.
Uh-huh.
So there's another one where maybe if you feel like, and I don't think it's enough where you bring a guy in and immediately you're going to bump Jalen Petrie out of the lineup, but I also know that you need some safety depth too because of the fact that, you know, you've got Jimmy Ward out and you've been shuffling the back of the defense anyway besides Bullock.
The thing is, if you trade for a death piece at corner, he's not a starter originally, you're not really upgrading your secondary. Like, yes, it'd be nice to have the death piece, and if you get an injury, then he's plug and play, all of that, but you're not really upgrading it. Like, if he's a backup and then he's playing because he's pressed into action because of injury, well, you didn't upgrade your secondary. You didn't trade for a corner that's benching any of those guys. I think the question might come down to two things. One, would they be willing to move Jalen Petrie back to safety?
See, that's a question.
I don't think so. Like, because if you're moving him off of safety, I don't think that you're willing to move him back to safety. Because if you're moving him away from the position, I believe that tells me that they don't like him in that position.
Especially in D'Amico's defense. I can see that because he inherited Petrie. I think there's something to that.
And he's also a guy who gives up big plays.
Yeah.
Like, you remember last year, bad angles, mm-hmm. or he'd bite on play action. Like, he wasn't that center fielder that is not going to surrender the big play. And it's not only unique to D'Amico Ryan's defense. You're seeing this more in the NFL nowadays, whether it's cover two shells or just, you know, center fielder back deep. They try to prevent the big play. They don't want offenses to get them with one play. Right. They want an offense to have a 12-play drive, because if you have a 12-play drive, there's more likely that there could be a mistake there. If they move Jalen Petrie off of safety, I don't think that they're going to have a desire to move him back to safety. Now, out of desperation, out of need, but again, you're not improving your secondary. You're doing that because there's been injuries. The second question that I would have, would they bench Jalen Petrie?
Boy,
I think that's more likely than moving him to safety.
I don't think they're going to bench him unless they have a better option to replace him.
Sure.
So I think that, to the point you're making, I do think it depends on who you trade for, because mm-hmm. we do know now that there are teams that are willing to give up their starting corner or starting type players because they are basically going to start embracing and trying to play for draft picks and know that they're not going anywhere. And we mentioned a couple of the teams yesterday to where now maybe there's a more pressing need that you're looking now a little bit harder at finding a corner of a certain level than just a depth piece that could help you at one or two different positions in your secondary.
Like, if you're going to trade for a corner, you might as well have it be an upgrade to where you're restructuring what you're doing in the second. Don't trade. And yes, okay, whatever, like the depth piece, whatever. Like, that's fine, but you're not improving it. Now, the Lassiter injury throws a wrinkle into things. If Lassiter's out for 2 months, it's like, oh, you probably need a boundary corner, because D'Angelo Ross, I think, will be exposed at some point. So, depending on the length of Kamari Lassiter's injury, could certainly change this whole conversation. But if Lassiter comes back in 3 weeks, you still have Jalen Petrie healthy. He's still getting burnt over the middle. Derek Stingley you're fine with. Like, he's locked into cornerback number one, assuming health. I think the move that you make is for a guy that you trust in the nickel spot that can defend the slot, and I think you bench Jalen Petrie. Now, can you improve the secondary, or the safeties rather? Yeah, you could probably find an upgrade over to Eric Murray, but is that helping your coverage a ton? I don't know. And, like, how many guys can play the safety position that are very good in coverage? Like, if the whole point of trading for a corner is because you want to get stickier in coverage, you want to be better at man-to-man, I don't think you're trading for a safety. Now, if you want to, you know, throw out Buda Baker, I'd be all for that. But I don't really know if that helps your coverage game. That just helps your defense. Now, I'd be all in favor of that. But if you're trying to improve your coverage and you're trying to make your corners improve, like in man-to-man coverage, I think benching Jalen Petrie's on the table.
Yeah, I think at a certain point, I think you have to face the reality because of the fact that, you know, the Lassiter piece of this is extremely interesting because, like you said, before the injury, you're just looking for, you know, adding an able body that is capable of filling in wherever you might need from week to week if a minor injury pops up. But if Lassiter's out for any significant period of time, now I'm looking across the league at teams that might be fire sailing a starting corner because I need help there. From the Petrie standpoint, it's interesting because of the fact that everybody sees the impact plays and the players talk about who was the biggest hitter, who was the guy that made the hits that were impactful. Sure, it's Petrie. But when you go back and look at the film and you realize as much as he did positive things in terms of his line of scrimmage play, he was getting cooked in the middle of the field and you can't afford to do that. So if it means you have to bench him and you put him in a rotation or he's your depth piece, then so be it, because this team has higher aspirations than trying to worry about his feelings because he's been here a little longer.
Third question. Would you move Kamari Lassiter inside depending on the piece you traded for?
See, right now I wouldn't because of the fact that I think that all everything's on the table for the sake of winning.
Sure.
Because you know that long term, I think he's still going to be a boundary corner for you. He's going to be an outside guy. He can be. He started there. He looks like he's fully capable of playing there. But for one season, if it means that you move him inside because you get someone that's more established on the outside and all of a sudden your secondary becomes more locked down than it's ever been, then you've got to put that in play. He still, for the long term, can play wherever you want him to play and grow into and be the piece that you want on the other side of Stingley. But for the sake of this season and the success of this season and giving yourself a better chance to be successful on defense and win football games, yeah, then I'll move him inside and I'll let a guy that's more experienced on the outside play there.
I'm with you. Everything is on the table whenever you're trying to win football games. Like, I'm not worried about Jalen Petrie's feelings if I bench him whenever my desire is to have a deep playoff run. I don't care if I insult Kamari Lassiter because I'm asking him to play inside instead of outside if I trade for a corner and the best way I can provide good coverage defensively or to upgrade the secondary is that the corner I trade for is my boundary corner and Kamari Lassiter is my slot corner, my nickel corner. So I'm all in favor of anything that could improve your football team. And it depends on the piece that you traded for. And I wouldn't close the book on either side. Like, I'm not saying, okay, I'm not going to call on outside corners because of Kamari Lassiter. I'm going to call on outside corners, and if I find one that I like, then I'm making that change. Hey, D'Amico, go coach him up. I would be calling on inside corners. And if it's the inside corner that I'm trading for, well, good. That's perfect because I can just keep Kamari outside. And then I think the depth now that you provide with Jalen Petrie because you'd be this hybrid, backup safety, backup corner. Hopefully he's not on the football field because you don't want the other guys to get hurt. A bunch of texters are texting in right now. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Everybody's asking about Xavien Howard. Is he available? He's in Houston. He wants to be here. He's still available because nobody wants him because he wasn't very good last year and because he sent explicit content to his ex's son.
Oh, that's right.
Xavien Howard is toxic. No one wants Xavien Howard despite the fact that Xavien Howard used to be one of the best corners in the NFL. He's a few years removed from being one of the best corners in the NFL. People don't want to touch Xavien Howard right now, which is very evident. How do I know that? Because he is not employed by any of the 32 teams in the NFL. The answer to Xavien Howard is a big no.
Right, exactly. I think this is now at the point in the season where you don't know what kind of shape any of these guys that are out there that are just sitting there as street free agents at this point are going to be to you, and I don't think that's what they're looking to do. You need someone that's in football condition, that's been playing football this season, that's someone that's been on a roster and hopefully starting somewhere that can come in and provide you an upgrade at where you're in deficient right now. And right now you're deficient at the second cornerback position because of the situation with Lassiter. And you don't know, we certainly don't know, how long that's going to be. They have a good idea. But if it's anywhere close to what you looked up and found out, then I'm looking for a starting corner across the league, and I'm knocking on a door at Cleveland, and I'm looking at teams that are trying to shed salary or aren't going anywhere that are willing to part with a player that might be able to fill in and give me what I need for now and then help me in terms of depth for later.
Yeah. Newsom's a guy that I've seen like a lot of fans want. Don't love Pro Football Focus, but because I don't watch the Cleveland Browns every single snap, it's kind of the go-to to get a baseline of what a player is. And Newsom's not having a great year, according to Pro Football Focus. But, hey, you know, I trust Casario in that moment, and I trust D'Amico Ryans on what a guy's going to look like in his defense. But, yeah, the Lassiter injury throws a huge wrinkle into what the Texans are going to need at the trade deadline, which comes up in just a few weeks. 713-780-ESPN. Busy show. Mickey Story, 330. Myron Fader with the Dream Book joining us at 4. Garrett, blessing or stressing? I wonder what we're blessing or stressing today. Cannot wait for that at 4:30. 713-780-ESPN on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. YouTube at ESPN Houston. Twitter at ESPN975. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. Brian at Sacked by B-Mac. I'm at Jeremy Branham. All right, we talked about corner. If you can make one move right now to acquire a player to help the Houston Texans, what position would they play? Maybe your answer is corner. 713-780-3776. What would it be for you? It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from our good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville right here in the Medical Center, right here in Houston, Texas, doing a lot of great work on a daily basis. He's the best in the business at doing the NeoGraft procedure and PRP treatments to get your hair back. It's not sprays and creams and foams that just mask the problem. them, no, it's legit getting your hair back and getting it where you need it most. Maybe your hairline is thinning and is going up from a 4-head to an 8-head. Maybe you got a shiny baboon's butt showing off on the top of your head that you want another cover-up, and you want it to be your own hair. That's where Doc and his staff come in. And you've heard about PRP treatments. In terms of the analogy with lawn care, if you have hairs on your head, they're just simply not as thick and strong and firm as they once were. The fact that PRP treatments can get involved and kind of like fertilize your lawn, it fertilizes the hair, it fortifies the hair, and it gets the hair back to when it was as thick and strong as it's ever been. And if Doc looks at your scalp and says, yeah, it's a little too far gone for that, and he wants to tell you about the Neograft procedure. The Neograft procedure, I had it. It's phenomenal. It's essentially like re-sodding your lawn. You're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how bald you go in other areas. So he takes some of that hair, puts it where you need it most. You see it instantly after the procedure. And then in 6 to 9 months, when it fully settles in, you are going to see your own hair, the same color, growing the same way, and there for the rest of your life. It is absolutely fantastic. It's a procedure that I would tell anybody about, but I'm telling you because right now you get a consultation with Doc and his staff like I had for free. It normally costs $150. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com and sign up for an appointment. Go in for that consultation. Ask questions, get answers. You get the whole consultation for free. There's no signing on the dotted line or commitment to be made or money out of pocket. It's just you getting the information that might make a difference in you getting your hair back. Check them out today. Go to 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
They're getting on to me on Twitch because we're talking about certain player. Like, they're bringing up Kareem Jackson. Like, the Texans tried that last year. Could barely get on the football field. Cap brings up Patrick Peterson, who is a free agent. All I see are, like, these guys are collecting AARP, I think.
No one has Patrick Peterson on their roster.
He's a free agent.
He actually played decent last year, didn't he? Decent?
Kind of slow.
He's a million years old.
Yeah, he's old.
I understand that. But, I mean, I think he was in Minnesota last year or somewhere where he was starting for them.
But I also think he'd been moved to safety. Like, I don't think he was playing any corner. And I do think that the speed of the game passed him up. King of Twitch is calling me an ageist. Yeah, I admit it. I am an ageist when it comes to professional sports.
Especially
absolutely
football.
Am. I do favor the young professional athletes over the old professional athletes. I am an ageist. I openly admit it. King of Twitch, when you say that, you are 100% accurate. Truer words have never been said by you. Well, never typed, at least. I've never heard the sound of your voice.
Is there any sport where it's better to be an ageist than football?
Football's up there.
Basketball's...
Yeah, but there's some oldies. I mean, LeBron James is still doing it a while.
Yeah, there's guys that still do it pretty well into the 30s.
Those two are like the exception to the rule, though.
But still, you got half the stars in the league there in the 30s.
But compared to the NFL, I think that age lasts a little bit longer in the NBA than the NFL.
I mean, yeah, but we can say Brady made it to his 40s.
Yeah, 45.
But that's far more the outlier to me than it is
so
the NBA.
I think MJ and LeBron, same way.
Yeah, they could be outliers for sure. Yeah. I think it depends on the position. Because, like, there's certain positions that you can get by being an old. You can get by being an old if you're a quarterback that's, you know, cerebral, gets rid of the football quickly, can read defenses. You know, Manning played for a really long time.
Kicker, punter,
long snapper. I even think tackles can play
for
a while.
Offensive line. Yeah.
Like Whitworth went until he was pretty stinking old. So, like, there's certain positions that you can get by being an old, for sure. Defensively, maybe defensive end a little bit, like a niche defensive end that plays third downs.
Like
Michael
Wolfer.
Strahan did
Jerry
it forever.
Old.
Yeah, Strahan did it forever. Bruce Smith did it forever.
Vince can just clog the middle.
Yeah, that's another one.
Big as a house.
Yeah, but like the speed positions.
The quick switch positions.
Yeah, secondary. Yeah.
Receiver,
secondary
DB,
is probably the worst defensive position for an old. Running back, receiver, worst offensive positions for an old. So I would say it's position by position in the NFL. I think that's a good point. I was going to bring up boxing, but you see boxers kind of go for a little bit longer.
Oh, yeah.
Tennis back in the day, you hit 30, you were toast. You were done. But, like, they go a little longer
they
now.
They do. I mean, even Federer and Nadal are hanging on and still holding their own for the most part. Baseball's one where you go forever.
better, more than the other sports, yes. But you do see, you see a decline in hitters, especially, and pitchers, once they hit 30.
Contracts.
They start going down.
Contracts mean something, too. Maybe. We talked about Miggy and you know, Pujols and guys that just were getting paid where you can't just, you weren't just going to cut them, and they just hung around, but they were terrible.
Yeah.
Pitchers, I think the pitch clock makes a big difference, because we saw the Bartolo Colons and the guys that just pitched into their 40s that you don't see. Verlander's kind of the rarity now.
Yeah. Like, if you look at just, like, I'm a nerd, so I look up these graphs and these charts. If you look at the, like, the average age and then, like, their war, you see decline late 20s, early 30s. Like, a pretty sharp decline. Now, is it as big a decline as the NFL or the NBA? Probably not. But I am an ageist, King of Twitch. I am that.
Golf hangs on a lot.
Yeah, and they also have a league that you can play in whenever you get older.
But even still, you know, you see guys that are in their late 40s that can still go on a run.
Not that often anymore. It was more prominent back in the day, but like this new wave of post-Tiger golf, it's much less.
There's more athletes.
Much less.
Last year, Stuart Sink went on like a 3-4 tournament run.
He was winning these random events, though. Like, look at the majors, how often you get
majors
olds.
Is different.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. But back in the day, you had guys in their 40s that were contending for majors all the time. I think that the Tiger Woods wave, because he did make, you know, the sport popular, and you have a lot of young golfers that are now not even that young anymore. They're in their 30s. That looked at Tiger Woods as the inspiration to play, made golf cool. And after that, you look at all these major champions, very few of them are as old, especially when you look at that compared to the pre-Tiger Woods era.
Yeah, I think the last one you could say on a major was like Tom Watson at the British about 5 years ago. No, he blew it. He had
it was longer than 5 years ago.
Was
though.
It?
That was probably 10 years ago.
He had it in his hands and just completely choked it off.
Needed
down
par
the
on 18?
Yeah.
I actually thought he had a good approach.
I did too.
Blew it past the green. I thought I was rooting for him big time in that. Now there are certain courses you can be an old. British Open, you can be an old and compete.
The Masters.
Masters a bit. Although
Longer goes there every year and is like 60.
He's never
somehow,
yeah,
he makes the cut.
Yeah,
he's not going to be competing to win it.
He's never competing
but
to win.
But if you make
it.
The cut, it's a good payday.
But you can be an old and have a better chance at the Masters than going to this 8,500 yard course,
sure,
and having a chance.
Right.
All right, we got sidetracked there. If you can make one move right now to acquire a player to help the Texans, what position would they play?
See, for me, it's between two positions. And because of the fact that we're looking at a situation, as we talk about, with short-term ramifications affect what I would do in terms of getting a player that I also want long-term. It would be linebacker, it'd be corner. And because of the fact that we don't know how long Laster's going to be out, that kind of moves me to the front of the class of saying that's almost as top priority as linebacker to me. But otherwise, it's linebacker, especially in this week when To'o is probably not going to play with the concussion. We don't know if El Shaair is going to play or not, and he's so vital to this defense. You already know that you don't know when Christian Harris is going to be back. So your depth at linebacker, no matter how much you think Hewitt is a guy that can fill in and do some things for you, I think that could derail what has been a very – we talked yesterday about the calling card of this team so far this year has been defense, but that can derail a whole lot of that if you start getting too thin and lesser than at linebacker. I would start at linebacker, and then I'd move to corner.
Linebacker's going to be so scary this weekend.
It really is. Like, I am hoping to God that El Shaair somehow can play.
I think there's a good chance. I wouldn't look at him missing today's practice as the big indicator. No. Tomorrow's going to be the indicator. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think Henry To'o is going to play. He's in the protocol, and he's been in the protocol for 3 days. He's not going to play this week. So you're looking – if El Shaair doesn't play, you're looking at a Neville Hewitt, Jake Hansen linebacker.
Oh,
I wonder if they go
goodness.
A bunch of dime,
yikes.
Though. I wonder if they go dime and just
they,
play.
They would have to.
The problem with dime, though, is you don't have Jimmy Ward. And whenever they go dime, they play their three safeties. So now you're looking to go deep in your safety depth
Which
or deep in your
there.
Linebacker depth.
Yeah, neither
so
one's
it's like,
there.
Yeah, and pick your poison.
And then you've got problems because you know they've got a big-time bell cow running back in Jacobs.
Yeah, Jacobs will run all over.
And so
over
he'll run all over them. And on the and also, they love the intermediate pass game with the four wide receivers they throw out there.
I think they might go dime.
And so Jeremy might be right. That might be the only alternative that they have, simply because if you're going to trust those two guys at linebacker with what Green Bay is going to throw at you, you're going to have problems.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. But I like the two that you said. Now, the linebacker one that I'll push back a little bit, not that I'm opposed to it, just to push back a little bit, you do expect help there. Like, you're expecting
sure.
to – I mean, Azeez, this doesn't look like it's long-term. He came back into the game. Henry To'o, concussion, going to miss a game, maybe two, but he's coming back. Christian Harris, the calf, fingers crossed, don't know. You assume that he would come back, but you're not – it's not a guarantee. And the Texans have played almost all nickel. They did have a few snaps 4-3 this past game, but they've played almost all nickel, so you can get by with two linebackers, and you feel like with the three you have coming back that it's pretty good there. A corner would be up there for me. I don't love trading for an offensive lineman, although I think the offensive line can upgrade. because I think it's very hard to plug and play an offensive lineman in a scheme, in a system, in the middle of the year. Mm-hmm. I think that's very difficult. Some people were bringing up receiver to me earlier. I'm good there. I don't think they need some people on Twitter are asking about Mike Williams. Like, I don't think that it's necessary. I don't think it's needed. But if you traded a seventh rounder for Mike Williams, would I be mad? No, I wouldn't be mad at that. I just don't think it's necessary. A texter saying, can Petrie return kicks? Not sure whether that matters, but I don't think I've ever seen him return a kick.
I don't need to see him do it either.
0312 says we need an offensive coordinator. Slowick just called a great game against New England. And then someone else saying, Cody saying tight end, if and only we could trade Schultz. I'm done with that guy, I think. You can't trade Schultz at this juncture. Nope. I don't think they'll be in the market for at least a starting caliber tight end. I could see them, like to Brian's point the other day, trading for a blocking specific tight end to add to the mix, help your run game.
You obviously lost Brevin Jordan earlier in the year. Cade Stover's a rookie. Maybe he's still getting his feet wet. He's not really to take on a lot of reps yet. And Dalton Schultz has frankly shown an unwillingness in the blocking game quite a bit. So, that would be my off-the-board need, because I think you guys are right. Linebacker and corner are the top two. But
there's another one.
But tight end would be mine.
Tight end's yours.
Tight end's mine.
But a tight end too?
Yeah, tight end too. Because I know they're gonna shoehorn Dalton Schultz to the starting lineup. Like, but give me a blocking tight end.
Shoehorn. Well done.
I'm curious which way the other one is. You talking safety?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Now I think that because of the position, corner matters more than safety. But if you could give me Buda Baker on this football team.
Oh, my God. That's a no-brainer.
Give me Buda Baker. So I would put safety on that list. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Mickey Story, national champion manager for the Spacers in Sugar Land, joins us next. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. First, a moment on HRP. They're champions in their field. Human resources and payroll, they're the best. Cougar, owned by my colleague Chris Fisher over there. All fantastic people at HRP. You could say they're the bee's knees. Business owners, let HRP help you. Whether it's HR compliance, benefits administration, payroll, onboarding, HRP can help in all of those areas. They can help in one of those areas. Whatever you need, they're going to take care of you. There's no boxes with HRP. Doesn't matter how small, how big. HRP completely customizes a plan for what you and your business needs. If you have a problem, an issue, you want to take a little bit off your plate, a lot off your plate, HRP will find a way to help. They do it in a way that's unique. Technology meets service. They have the best tech. You'll love that, but you will love their service. Guaranteed fulfillment. You'll never talk to a stranger. You'll be talking to someone who knows you and they know your business needs. Get HRP in your life. That way you can spend your time and your energy in the things you care about in your business. Give them a call right now, 281-880-6525. Let HRP customize a plan for you, 281-880-6525, or check them out at HRP.net. That's HRP.net.
ESPN 97.5.
On Hamilton, ball game, and the Space Cowboys are undeniable.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Garrett Green's final call, the Sugar Land Space Cowboys winning the national championship in AAA and being joined by the Space Cowboy manager now, Mickey Story. Congratulations on winning the title, Coach. What was different about this year's team than the others you've had in recent memory?
A lot of things. I mean, I think you know, you leave spring training every year and you get a roster, you write your first lineup, and you know the expectations are always high. But the continuity, the cohesiveness, the group just seemed to be so engaged, you know, on a daily basis. You know, enjoyed each other's time. You know, cherished, you know, wins. You know, took offense to, you know, criticism. You know, played with a chip on their shoulder, had something to prove. You know, all those things you hear about, you know, teams that they end up having special seasons. This team seemed to have it, and we kind of noticed it pretty early on.
Mickey, I'm curious from your standpoint, the challenges and the extra challenges when you've got a team like the Astros so close and they're bringing guys up with injuries and everything so frequently. I mean, you were challenged all the way to the end in terms of bringing up guys to the major league team right before you went to Vegas and who your pitchers would be and how that extra added kind of challenge for a manager in that position is.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge because, I mean, the ultimate goal and the objective is to feed the major league team the best we got. You know, our job is to get them prepared and have them ready to contribute at the big league level, and at times that means we lose our best guys. So the season kind of goes through those moments where you may have all your guys at one time and you may have none of those guys at a point. And down the stretch, it seemed like we were losing guys at a rapid rate. But we got, you know, we had guys from Double A come in and fill in, and we had some guys who are kind of staples there in Sugar Land all year really step up, you know. And then at the end, we made some switches. We lost Gusto, but we gained Shea Whitcomb. We lost to Zenzo, but, you know, got big outings out of you know, other guys. It was just your quintessential guy stepping up at the right times that made this team, you know, be undisputed and be undeniable, you know, winning the most games and then running through the playoffs and ultimately winning the championship. So many guys had a hand in it. It was very, very much a full team effort.
Mickey Story, manager of the Sugar Land Space Cowboys, national champions of AAA. You mentioned take offense to criticism, and the criticism we kind of heard some of the players take offense to were minor league rankings and these prospect lists and the MLB pipeline and all of that. Having the perspective of being a minor league manager, what do you have to say about prospect rankings? And what is it about the Astros that, you know, they don't always have guys on prospect rankings, but you look at a Yiner, a Jeremy Pena, a Framber Valdez, they're always able to develop their own even if they weren't highly touted.
Yeah, it's prospect rankings are one of those things that, you know, it's part of the game, it's part of the business, but it doesn't define the player at all. It kind of just puts it out there that this is what we got, and a great deal of prospect status has everything to do with, you know, what round you were drafted in, what your signing bonus was, what scouts in Baseball America and all the, you know, pretty much what they think you could be instead of what you actually are. And at any given moment, you can put yourself on the map. And the Astros seem to have a great deal of those players throughout my tenure here that, you know, play above their status and become performers. And really, at the end of the day, you just want performers. You don't need prospects. You know, if you want to wow baseball rankings, then with prospects, that's one thing. But if you want guys to perform and get results, that's a whole different thing. And they don't always go hand in hand. You know, the Astros have had a great player development system for some time now, and we've seemed to get the best out of guys that aren't overly, you know, ranked high in those prospect rankings. So it's kind of a testament to, you know, player development or scouting, you know, finding these diamonds in the rough, player development, you know, maybe implementing things that weren't there when we got them, and then ultimately the player being able to buy into what we were trying to accomplish. And like I said, play with a purpose and prove people wrong. We've had a number of players that weren't prospects get to the big leagues and be very impactful players.
I was going to say, how gratifying is that for you when you see it, and also kind of the pit it leaves in your stomach with a trade like for Kikuchi, when you know, well, you know, Joey's been up and he's been up and down, and you had Will Wagner, and you had, you know, Bloss, all these guys that were contributing to your squad, then they were up and down, but you kind of knew they were going to be around, and then all of a sudden in one fall swoop, there are three some of your main cogs that go away, but then you see them actually progress and flourish once they get to the big league level, even if it isn't within the organization.
Yeah, and honestly, those are the players that it's extra special to see, because when you have, you know, players like Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez, who I had in the minor leagues, you know what's going to happen there. Like, you know that they're going to be major league players at the bare minimum. And then the ceiling is all-stars, MVPs, Hall of Fame. Like, the sky's the limit. But when you have players that script's not written for, but you see something in them, you know, like a Will Wagner or a Loper Fido or a Zach DiCenzo, where they're, you know, middle of the draft guys or even back into the draft guys, and then you see the day in, day out, you know the makeup of the player, and then you see the production, you know that as this is going to be a major league player. Now, to see it come and go, that's part of it, you know. But to see Will Wagner and Lope, you know, get traded for a piece like Kikuchi, yeah, it hurts because you're putting in work with those guys and you know what they're capable of. But that's sometimes that's what's best for the player and what's best for your organization. And that's when those trades take place. You know, you make a relationship with those players, and all you want them to do is maximize their careers. And that's, you know, they're definitely on pace on doing that. But, you know, it's one of those love-hate things. You, like I said, you put in a lot of time with the guys, and, you know, you build a relationship, and you want it to be with us. But ultimately, you know, we're in this game to help players get better and reach their goals. So it's whether that's with us or with another team, you know, it's one and the same. It's great to see, you know.
Mickey Story joining us on the HRMP guest line, champions with the Sugar Land Space Cowboys in AAA this past season. You hear and see the revolving door of minor league coaches, and maybe the Astros are going through this a little bit right now. You get a general manager that might want to do things a little bit differently. What are the challenges of that for these minor league coaches, and then for the decision makers at the big league level, whenever you have this revolving door and this turnover when it comes to minor league coaches in the organization?
Yeah, it's one of those things that you got to deal with when you are a perennial organization. We've, you know, 7 ALCSs. You know, this is the first year we've come up a little short in the playoffs, but this is still a team that's been in the playoffs, what, nine years. And when you have that much success, everybody wants the secret sauce. So with that, coaches are coming and going. You know, other teams are trying to pluck them while they're trying to do that. Other coaches, you know, have ambition to, you know, potentially see what they could do elsewhere. It's tough, you know, it's tough. But you don't, when you have something so good for so long and then you have some change, the dynamic could possibly be a little bit different. And coaches come and go. It's just like players. It's not a whole lot different in the sense where, you know, coaches have career aspirations also. They want to get to the big leagues. They want coordinator roles. Maybe they want front office roles. Maybe they want to change the scenery, you know. And you know, it when the contract stuff comes up, you know, it's something I'm not too familiar with because I've always been, you know, taken care of for the most part. And then, you know, some other, you know, on the other side for the front office, it's who they want to retain, who they see as a good fit, like that. That's completely their call, so it's hard to say, but it's definitely tough because you want to continue to build with what we have, but at the same time, you know, over this good run, we've lost a ton of coaches, so it's a challenge for sure.
Mickey, at the end of the year, you know, you just said you had Tuck and you had Yordan, and now you're looking at this squad and you're looking at guys that kind of catch your eye. Can you tell us a little bit about a guy that we've heard really climbing the system quite quickly in Matthews and the fact that he can play multiple infield positions and that he was a high draft pick? But what do you see in that kid?
Yeah, so obviously, I mean, I hadn't seen him much. So I saw him in spring training. He came in and filled in a couple big league games. I got to spend a little time with him there, but obviously didn't get to see him play a ton. So, you know, he had a good run, started your high A, played well in double A. I mean, and like we spoke of, there were times where we were losing players at a pretty rapid pace to the big league team. We lost Shea Whitcomb, we lost Leon, we lost DeZenzo. And I was kind of wondering, man, is there a chance that we get Bryce Matthews up here just because it's getting thin, and I know he's having a pretty good year. So when we got a chance to get him, and I wanted him to just play. You know, I didn't want to try to, you know, fix things and what I heard and what he needs. I wanted to see him play. And what I found was that Bryce is a guy that he's a toolsy player. He's got some real raw ability. He's young in his career, but he likes to play the game. Like, he has a real passion to play the game, and he's going to be a really, really solid player. He just needs to figure out pro baseball. It happens fast. You know what I mean? Like, this guy got drafted last year. Before you know it, he's in the AAA playoffs, you know, playing every day. He's playing shortstop. He's playing third base. You know, he's in big situations with a team that was as close to playing, you know, major league caliber playoff baseball as any team I've been around in the minor league. Like, it was really, really a big deal for that club. And he fit right in. Like, he didn't miss a beat, which was a great experience. So I love what's ahead for Bryce. The makeup's really strong. He's a ball player. He's gonna continue to work. You know, I think winter ball was in the plans for him this offseason to kind of continue to fine-tune some things. But he's a really, really nice young man. He's a good-looking player. He's one that we're excited about.
Can he handle the hot corner at the big league level, Skip?
Yeah, I think he can. That's kind of where he ended up settling in with us down the stretch, mostly because of the way it shaped out for us and lineup construction on my end. It wasn't necessarily by any other than that was the way it worked best. But I think the third base looks good on him. I think the shortstop will continue to play. Third base, sure. I mean, it's definitely going to be a left side of the infield with a potential to play second base maybe if need be, however it fits with us. Obviously, second base isn't as much of a fit because of the Hall of Famer we have. Mm-hmm. But if he needs to play third base, shortstop, you know, the kid's an athlete. He's utility. I know we've tried to make, you know, guys well-rounded. I'm sure he could put on an outfield glove and play out there if need be. One thing is Bryce is a heck of a ball player, so he's going to find a way to get on the field.
We really appreciate the conversation. We'll keep that lineup construction conversation to a different time. But I enjoyed the chat. Thank you for the insight, and congratulations again on winning that national championship.
I appreciate it, guys.
Mickey Story, the manager of the Sugar Land Space Cowboys, AAA affiliate, of course, with the Houston Astros, national champions of AAA, and you can catch the Space Cowboys once they get back to playing some baseball on ESPN 92.5. Speaking of an Astro, Justin Verlander, does it make any sense? Is there a plausible scenario that exists for Justin Verlander to remain a Houston Astro? 713-780-3776. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Does Justin Verlander make sense for the Astros? Well, as LeBron yesterday, Michael Shapiro. Does Justin Verlander make sense for the Astros 2025 rotation? Is there a scenario out there, 713-780-ESPN, is there a scenario out there where bringing back Justin Verlander to the Astros makes sense at all?
I think the only way that you even consider it is if you still have issues with some of the guys coming back from injury. You don't want to spend the money, or you spend it elsewhere to where you're not going to go look for a starting pitcher out on the market, and he gives you a substantial discount, and or Crane gets involved. Because other than that, you still have a surplus of starting pitching. You're expecting to get a lot of guys back for next season, even some of the guys that were supposed to be back this season, a la Garcia more than McCullers, but both of them, and whatever happens, and whenever J.P. France is supposed to come back, if he factors in at all. You just have options galore at starting pitching, and the fact that he was not very good down the stretch, and he wasn't close to the Justin Verlander we've seen throughout his career. And because, you know, at the last that we've had to deal with Justin Verlander from a price tag standpoint, it's been very, very high. So a whole lot of, like, the sun and the moon would have to line up, but I don't think that the only way that that's even factored in is if he gives you a monster hometown discount and you've got some stumbling blocks with the injury, guys coming back from injury.
That's about where I'm at, too, because if we don't assume that the Astros make this splashy trade, like we picked around the idea, does it make sense to trade a Framber Valdez, which I think it does, I just don't see the Astros actually doing that. Would I encourage them to? Absolutely, 100%. Are the Astros going to make that type of move? I don't think so. When pigs fly, when frogs get wings, all of those things. I don't believe that would be in the cards. So you're looking at a rotation of Framber. Hunter Brown would be back. Ronel Blanco is going to be back. Arrigetti is back. That's all the starting pitchers that you had healthy at the end of the year. You had Yusei Kikuchi, but Yusei Kikuchi's a free agent, so he's no longer a Houston Astro. I didn't miss any other healthy starters that were factoring into the opening day rotation, right? Healthy starters.
Right, I don't believe so.
Because Luis Garcia is throwing bullpens again. He should be back at some point. I don't believe in the ghost of Lance McCullers until Lance McCullers proves me wrong, so I'm not even going to mention him. Although I did see SportsMap had an article about how Lance McCullers is opening a new Tex-Mex restaurant in Houston. So
he's
the
now
entrepreneur,
more cook than pitcher. Yeah. To the barista, more barista.
I would say entrepreneur. I don't think he's going to get into the kitchen. Okay. I don't think he's going to be throwing down the fajitas.
No, I think, he's either a restaurateur or an entrepreneur.
Yeah, he's more of that than
but
he's a pitcher
right
these
now
days.
Has been manure.
It's not even manure because it doesn't exist.
Well, because we haven't seen it.
It doesn't even exist. It can't be bad because there's been nothing to be bad.
On social media, it exists in full uniform.
Not in a while, though.
No.
Not in a while. So Lance McCullers, we're not going to put in this conversation because we're not going to fall for the Lance McCullers trap. But Luis Garcia should be back. Mm-hmm. Urquidy's not going to come back until the summer. Christian Javier not back into the summer. And then we fell for that with Lance McCullers and Luis Garcia. I didn't miss any other starters there. I think I nailed your starters. Your opening day rotation, if you bring nobody back, should be Fromber, Hunter Brown, Ronel Blanco, Spencer Arrighetti, and Luis Garcia. Mm-hmm. Assuming Luis Garcia comes back, assuming you don't have any injuries in spring training. Now, do the Astros want to go five-man rotation? Do they want to go six-man rotation? So that's like your first question. The second one would be, like, I do want to see them make a run at Yusei Kikuchi. Do I think they'll be able to sign Yusei Kikuchi? I really don't. I don't. If I had to predict, gun to my head, I don't think Yusei Kikuchi is a member of the Houston Astros next season.
No, I agree with you. I think that when you look at some of the projections and what people were saying about the top 100 free agents, he's going to command upwards of $25 to $30 million a year. Or at least that's what they're guesstimating. And I don't think that's in your price range to get a guy that you really essentially are going to put somewhere. Yes, he was good for you, but with the guys that you already have, I just don't know where he fits into the rotation. Even if you put him up higher, it doesn't matter. I don't think it's worth spending the money and allocating the funds in that direction.
That's the thing to cost. Like, we would all love Yusei Kikuchi and just go six-man rotation. But whenever you have a starting five and then you're adding a sixth guy, and yeah, Kikuchi might be better than some of these guys, but are you going to add a guy who's now part of a six-man rotation that's not your one, not your two? Maybe he's your number three, but he's not as good as Fromber. He's not as good as Hunter Brown. Are you going to pay that guy $20 to $25 million a year? That's why I don't think Kikuchi will be a member of the Astros.
Especially because of the fact that you know Verlander's going to walk, but you're looking at what's going to happen with Bregman, and you have you're going to need money if you're going to go external on the free agency market for a third baseman.
Not that that's a lock.
No, but also if you want a bat, we talked about, do you want another bat in the outfield?
Yep.
There's enough money to be spent there as well. And those are everyday players as opposed to every fifth or sixth day if we're talking about rotational guys.
I would be pretty stunned if the Astros signed Yusei Kikuchi. I think they will kick the tires on Kikuchi, and I know Kikuchi likes to be an Astro, but I just don't see them spending $20 million on a starting pitcher whenever they already have a formidable five-man rotation. So there will be options that they like more than Verlander that I think that they're probably going to be priced out of, whether it's Yusei Kikuchi, whether it's some other free agent starting pitchers that they might kick their tires on. So the scenario that I see that exists where Verlander is an Astro is if the Astros want six healthy starters at the start of the year, which I'm okay with that idea. I like a six-man rotation to limit the innings of some of your best pitchers, especially with the Astros having deep postseason runs this last year notwithstanding. So I'm in favor of the six-man. So you'd have to be in favor of the six-man rotation for a majority of the season. You have that mindset. You have to swing and miss, pardon the pun, on a lot of starting pitchers that you have higher than Justin Verlander. And then the final thing is that you would have to have Justin Verlander on a very team-friendly contract. Now, I'm looking at a one-year deal. I'm not signing Verlander to a multi-year deal, and I'm looking at probably like $5 million. Now, I don't think the demand for Justin Verlander is going to be all that great.
I think that what he wasn't able to do and didn't show at the end of the season is going to have a lot of buyer beware on the market. I think that as much as he's done what the back of his baseball card says, going forward, I just don't see a situation where teams are going to throw anywhere near the kind of money that he was last time he hit the open market when he crossed the $40 million a year threshold that teams were willing to give. And we saw that even that for the Mets backfired so much so that they got rid of him, pretty quickly. And now he's fallen off so much. I tend to agree with you. I don't think there's ever a situation Justin Verlander's ego is going to settle for $5 million. But I think that it's definitely going to be significantly, significantly lower than what he might be looking for, what he got last time.
That would definitely be I want to be an Astro, so I'm signing for less. No doubt about that. If Justin Verlander went into free agency with the idea, I'm going to sign with the highest bidder no matter what, like maybe Alex Bregman's doing, what do you think that the most Verlander could get per year? He's probably not getting more than a one, maybe his two-year vesting option, mutual option type of deal. But what would be the highest AAV that Verlander would get on the open market if he went to the highest bidder?
I would say 15 to 17.
Okay, I'm about 12 to 15.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking around 15 too.
Same ballpark though.
Yeah.
Somewhere in a killer B range of 12 to 17 million. How much of a discount would Verlander be willing to take to stay with the Astros?
Not much, but I'd say maybe 10, 11.
So if $10 million, you think it would get it done?
Yeah.
If he'd give
That's
you
too
the,
much for what I want of Verlander.
I agree.
That's
if he'd give you the deal that Charlie Morton took, 6 years ago now? 2 years, $14 million, so $7 million per year. Would you take that?
The second year would need to be a mutual option or some sort of vesting option that's triggered by accolades.
I think his ego would say vesting. Yeah, because I don't think
– That's fine.
Yeah, but if you want to do a vested option for 2 years at that money, I'd consider it just because you have so many uncertainties about health with coming back from injury from so many pitchers.
Yeah, I could sign up for that because I don't want to fall into the trap that we have the last couple years about looking at five healthy starters and going, okay, we're good. We don't need them anymore. Then a month into the season, half of them are gone like the last couple of years has happened. So I'd be willing to talk to Verlander, but I think I'd cap out at the Charlie Morton deal.
But here's the other thing too, guys. The fact that we know he's got an ego. We know he's chasing some personal goals, and one of them is 300 wins. And if he's going to be in a six-man rotation,
which limits his market, though.
Exactly. But it's also from a standpoint, from his standpoint, he's looking for a team where he maybe doesn't want to pitch every sixth game. Maybe he wants to pitch every fifth game because he's trying to win an average of 10 to 14 games a year.
Yeah.
So it's got to, there's so many different kind of elements from what he's looking for that I don't think many teams fit the bill to be able to match up with that.
Yeah. What his motive is matters a ton when it comes to who his next team is, mm-hmm. for sure. I think that his ego is taking a backseat, though. Like, I really do.
I think the playoff thing and all of how the season ended.
Being older, I think being older, being more pedestrian, I think that that takes a hit to the ego. Like Verlander was talking about, hey, I want to just whatever I can to help the team win. You know, if I have to be in the bullpen, so be it. If I'm not on the roster, so be it. So I think that Verlander, you know, it's probably fair to say the ego thing with Verlander. I just think that the maximum of Verlander ego has been cut like in half, at least in half. I feel like the Verlander ego thing is kind of an old conversation.
I just think from the standpoint of his ego says he still wants to win 300 games.
Maybe so, yeah.
And I think that's the bigger thing.
And I don't know if that's necessarily ego. Like, that might just be the motivator. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's where I was going to say. It's semantics on the terminology because I think that he is driven by the fact that, yes, I think he wants to. Part of him chasing his individual goal of getting to 300 wins is he's got to play with a decent team. Mm-hmm. So winning is going to factor in from that standpoint alone. Now, how does that factor into him making a decision and maybe going to a market that he and the wife and the family don't want to go to or aren't enthusiastic about going to because of the fact that, again, I think the teams are going
to
be limited.
8693, if JV wants those wins, he's got to go to a good team. That part is true, but he also probably has to go to a team that's willing to pitch him every fifth day and not every sixth day. 8693, I know it's not realistic, but Kikuchi owes the Astros a discount for pitching or for fixing his pitching arsenal. I mean, I guess.
He doesn't owe anybody anything, but a tip of the cap and a thank you very much, but he's going to go cash in.
Yeah, I do think he likes Houston, but I think it's going to be too much. Is it plausible for Verlander to sign with the Astros in a relief role? He can make spot starts against bottom feeders and otherwise try to farm wins in relief. No. Yeah, he's not going to be a reliever because of the 300 win thing.
Right.
8693, even if JV can pitch well, I don't expect him to stay healthy at his age, so no thanks. That's fair. It is fair. He's had injuries in each and every single one of like his last 3 years. 409, if he cuts down the ego and signs a $10 million deal, it's worth bringing him back. So $10 million 1 year. Strike out on some others. Dodger?
He's a Dodger.
I don't know.
Dodgers have a ton of pitching woes. They've been notorious for doing these kind of moves. He and Kate get the L.A. scene. He gets a winning team. He gets a chance that where he doesn't have to be fantastic. With that lineup, he just has to be decent. I see him as a Dodger.
I don't want to see him in L.A.
I don't want to see him there, I think that's going to be – they're going to be suitors for him.
What percentage chance does JV have to be an Astro?
25%.
Okay, I was going to go 20. And I feel like that's high, too. All right, 713-780-ESPN. When we return, Myron Fader, the author of The Dream, new book about Hakeem Olajuwon. So join us next. It is The Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.